This is Talking About Spring, a part of an archive broadcast, Nature of Things, from March 13th, 1987.
With the unusually warm weather last week, it was predictable, I think, that almost everyone I ran into would be talking about spring, signs of spring, remembrances of spring past, speculations about spring to come. I've been keeping track of the questions, and here offer some observations and a few speculations about spring. Let's talk first about the effects of the unseasonably warm weather. Perhaps the most obvious one is the rapid disappearance of snow, accompanied by the emergence of acres of green-brown pasture and weed fields, most of which looks like it had been recently subjected to a giant roller. It's not the open fields themselves I talk about here. I'm more concerned here with the fate and the effect of all that rapidly melted snow. Some of it evaporates, of course, and I don't know how to measure that, so I'm going to ignore it for the moment. My observation is that over the two warmest days, as much as 4 inches of wet snow disappeared from many south-facing slopes. If we calculate the water content at 60%, that's high, but I bet it's not far off. We're talking about 7,800 cubic feet, just under 60,000 gallons of water per acre, that left its place of winter repose and headed pell-mell for local streams and waterways, via ditches, road culverts, even across flat fallow crop fields. Since the ground at that time is hardly capable of absorbing water, the percentage of runoff is very high. Stream levels rise rapidly, producing a great deal of stress on the stream bed and on the aquatic life. In effect, everything not firmly anchored shifts downstream. At times when streams are swollen, then populations are displaced. At places where stream flow is restricted, there may be a great deal of gouging and redeposition of bottom. The whole nature of the stream bed may be changed markedly. That's why fishermen may find the contour of a familiar, well-learned stream bottom drastically remodeled and suddenly strange again. No less important than this is a surcharge of silt, which results from the fallow fields being so vulnerable to erosion. The farmer who finds a brook which drains his acreage chocolate brown with silt ought to question his own land use practices. A part of his capital is running away with the spring freshet. Better to fallow than to disc or plow in fall, if the slope of the fields make them vulnerable to erosion. Better still to plant a cover crop. Don't forget, too, that silt-choked streams are hardly helpful for the stream life. The habitats of Baltimore Brook are slowly being degraded by the upswing in siltation that results from increasingly abusive use of its remote watershed. That's about enough black commentary for this episode of the Nature Things. How about a few of the questions I've been getting about the rights of spring? First, there are those questions about geese flying south, east, west, everything but north. What's wrong with them? Are they thoroughly confused by the changing weather? I think not. The flocks you see flying just after sunup, just before noon, at mid-afternoon, or just before sundown, most likely represent passage from places of rest to favored feeding spots. We're located between Ontario and the Finger Lakes, both of which keep open throughout the winter, harboring for some reason increasing populations of wintering geese. There are well-marked patterns of east-west foraging flights from the north-south laying Finger Lakes to the upland cornfields between them. Oswego County and Cayuga County, north of the Finger Lakes, tend to have north-south flights. In this case, the geese are traveling to corn and grain stubble, which lays between Ontario and Cayuga or Seneca. It's been said that geese will forage as much as 25 miles from their resting areas. That's only about a half-hour flight for them. Don't count on seeing true migration flights during the daytime until May. How about all those robins you've been seeing of late? Some even in your dooryards. Has the migration time for robins been changing? Some birds have been known to alter their flights to some extent to catch southerly winds blowing across our lands from southern highs toward Canadian lows. But I suspect that these early robins are not true migrants. Wintering robins are not a rarity in central New York anymore. I know where I can find robins almost any winter month. The Valley of Baltimore Brook is such a place. Are the wildflowers going to be early because of this mild weather? I don't really know. My own informal observations and notes indicate that the first blooms of early wildflowers may be a week early or late from year to year, but mid-May tends to see a leveling out of the blossom time. things are normally on schedule by then. The effects of mild or severe Aprils and Marches are lost by then. That's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.